On today's Talking Puck podcast, we have several different topics that are all part of the same family. It might be helpful if you've seen by now Lars Eller's hit on Jesperi Kotkaniemi at the end of the Capitals' Carolina game, but also perhaps you know that Nathan MacKinnon is missing a huge game Tuesday night against Calgary. Why? Because he stood up for a teammate who got hit cleanly at center ice. There's a lot of things that go into this. Whose responsibility is it to stand up for teammates? When is the appropriate time? What is the role of the pest in today's game? And when is it crossing the line? Mike and I have a lot to talk about, a lot of thoughts on this topic, and this might be one of the best, most engaging podcasts we've done yet. So buckle up. There is a lot coming your way, but it's really a question that pervades hockey as a whole. Not just the National Hockey League, but at every level. And what is hockey going to do about these types of things moving forward? Stay tuned. The Talking Puck podcast is coming your way next. Hello, everyone. Welcome into our Talking Puck podcast. Tom Callahan and Mike Haynes, as always, with plenty to talk about. And in this particular podcast, we are going to kind of lump a bunch of stuff in together here because it all, as you'll see, it goes into this giant mixing bowl. But we're going to make this awesome cake out of it that is delicious and digestible, and you will love it. So, you know, Mike, it's always fun when we come in and we get ready to record and we have a bunch of things to talk about. And this week, I mean, just since the show on Sunday night, boy, oh boy, have we been given a lot of fodder by the National Hockey League. So yes. let's dive right in, and I'm going to let you kind of dictate the pace on this one. But I want to talk about, number one, Nathan MacKinnon injures his hand jumping in to fight Matt Dumba, the Minnesota Wild, after Dumba hits Rantanen, clean hit. He's hurt. He's out. Going to miss a big game tonight against Calgary as we tape this on a Tuesday. And then Lars Eller, 1.8 seconds left, goes in, cleans out Kasperi Kotkaniemi and the Carolina Hurricanes in a game that had already been decided. Wasn't even close. Now Kotkaniemi may be out. Looks like there was contact with the head from Eller. I think this all kind of ties together, but you know, wherever you want to start this one, I'm going to let you take it.
Well, I think just add one more part to this, or one more ingredient to this cake that you talked about. The fact that there's a nice article in the Toronto Star today, because there's a game, as you said, we're taping this on a Tuesday, and tonight, a big matchup between Toronto and Boston, both trying to vie for that third place spot in their division. But the article was about, who are the super pests? What can they do in today's NHL that maybe they couldn't do before, or can they do more? Because you got Michael Bunting, who you know, and of course you got Brad Marchand, who is the classic pest now in the National Hockey League. And so, just to throw that extra ingredient in, you know, are pests still part of the NHL, and what is the line that you cannot cross now in the NHL? And I think that leads more towards the Lars Eller situation. And I think if you're talking about the MacKinnon, to me, that's more about, what is your role and what are you trying to prove? I understand it. If you're an alternate captain, you're trying to stick up for teammates, but everybody has a role, I think, Tom. And nobody thinks MacKinnon is, look, he's a strong guy. You know, they know his type of toughness. There's a difference between guys who are big and strong, show up, will hit a little bit, and then other guys who are, you know, supposed to stand up, drop the gloves for your teammate. And if you are the best player on your team, and you're getting into fights and injuring yourself, I don't know if that is helping your team. It's more hurting your team, isn't it? Let's start with that. And then I'd love to hear your take on what role does Pest have now in the National Hockey League? And I think we're probably on the same page in terms of that Lars Eller hit. He crossed that line that we're talking about that Pests are not supposed to cross.
Okay, so first of all, wow. Okay, a lot of balls in the air here.
I know.
Let me take a swing at one of them.
A lot of ingredients in that cake.
Yes, there is, but I can't bake. I can cook, but I can't bake. So let's not get our hopes up unless Mike's really good at baking.
No. One of the few things I'm not good at.
Okay, there you go. First of all, I hate that we are trying to turn this into the no-hit league. In that if a guy throws a hit, he's got to answer for it every time. Gone are the days of if you catch a guy and you deliver a clean check, not to the head, you don't leave your feet, it's a good hit. Like Dumba was a good open, and open ice hitting requires timing. It requires a lot of skill. So, you know, you deliver a good hit on the other team's player, I understand that the other team is probably going to come after you. Is that McKinnon's job? No, it's not. First of all, you are far too valuable to your team to do that. But the problem, and this is a bigger question for Colorado, number one, I don't like having to answer for every single big hit.
No.
It is a massive turnoff for me in the game of hockey.
Agreed.
Number two, Mike, it makes me question, again, you talked about McKinnon trying to be a leader, has a letter, somebody else in the lineup needs to answer that bell. If, let's say the coach says somebody needs to answer that call, and that's just pre-established before you go out on the ice or any game. Okay, so that's how we're going to play it. Well, it cannot be Nathan McKinnon, as we see, who has hurt his hand, now is missing probably the biggest clash of the year tonight against Calgary, and at a very important time. This is could be a playoff precursor, could be a conference final precursor. You never want to miss a chance to set the tone. But the other thing is, man, and McKinnon now is starting to be questionable injury-wise. He's not the guy who should be answering that bell. I feel strongly about that as well. That is not his job. And if people on that Avalanche team think it is his job, that does not bode well for them for success in the playoffs, because Nathan McKinnon, newsflash, can't do everything. He doesn't have a cape and tights that I've seen in his locker stall. I've never seen him disappear into a penalty box booth and come back out wearing it. So I think it's asking one guy to do too much, and that is not good for a look for the team either. So I hate being forced to answer for the fight, and I hate the fact that it was McKinnon who decided he had to take it upon himself. Someone else needs to do that.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up, I think, what is more important. Look, I don't think that was his role. He may feel like, because it's a line mate, and they've been line mates for a while, that you have to stick up in for your line mate. But I think you brought up the bigger picture. I just couldn't stand, and I hate watching it, when a guy would make a clean hit and then immediately his head's on a swivel. He knows that there's one, two guys coming at him. That's not the game. If you make a fair hit. Now, if you do what Lars Eller did, and I hope people watch that video and take a look at it, I can then see why he better put his head on a swivel. If you're attacking somebody and putting your shoulder into the head, especially what we now know about brain injuries, concussions, long-term effects on hitting the head, and how the league has really tried to crack down on this, I think they could still do more. I think the penalties could be harsher, but then you better be looking around. But if you're making a fair hit and Dumba's hit was fair, why are they having then to put that head on the swivel and then have to drop the gloves and fight? I think it demeans the game itself to me. I really do. I don't understand that thinking. I wonder, hockey guys do stand up for their teammates. Those are good hockey players, but there's a time and a place for it. And good, clean hits are not that time or place.
I do. I am more of the old school, take a number, I'll get back to you. You know, you take that guy's number, and at the appropriate time of the game, if you feel he has to answer, you go back after him. That's fine.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be a fight, though, right?
Make
a hard hit on Dumba,
yeah. Legal. Keep all your elbows down. Put your shoulder right through his chest. That's fine. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You can even things up that way. So I agree, but to talk about Eller, and if you watch the hit in real time, the way it happens is you can tell Kotkaniemi's not looking. The puck goes by, and the initial camera angle is both players' backs, so you can't really see the point of collision. Then there's a replay, and this is what I want people who are listening, if you haven't seen this angle, to look for. There is an angle that shows looking straight down the glass where you see Eller at the end of this game. Again, 1.8 seconds left when he gets this charging penalty, and it's a charging penalty, so he had to go a pretty good distance at a pretty good rate of speed to even make this hit in a game that was well decided. The game was over.
Mm-hmm.
And right. The look down the glass shows his shoulder making contact with the head of Kotkaniemi. Now, number one, if somebody goes after Eller immediately, that's understandable because you've now injured a very mm-hmm. good player on this Hurricanes team. And I understand that that is the immediate point of retribution. Number two, if the NHL doesn't look at this for supplemental discipline, and you talk about crossing the line, Mike, this is beyond a couple of lines. This is number one, the game's decided, it's over. Anything you do now of this type of nature is clearly an intent to injure the other player. It is a frustration play. And when you make this kind of dangerous play and you target the head of another player, I think this requires not only further discipline, but more and more severe discipline. And I will say this, I don't think the league does enough. You talk about all the things we now know about head injuries, all the things that we're aware of. The NHL and most leagues, this is not just a hockey problem. Most professional sports leagues do not protect their athletes enough. And you know, I'm a player safety guy. Do you want your star athletes out there or not? Do you want these guys having CTE later on post-career? Do you want suicides on your hands because you couldn't suspend a guy long enough to get the message through that hitting the head is not okay? It's not okay. Can we please just, it's not okay.
No. And I feel like I'm a broken record on this, but I think the thing that has to happen is more severe penalties. And I bring this up, I've brought it up a number of times, but I'm going to bring it up again until something changes. When they wanted to stop the bench clearing brawls, what did they do? They not only punished the player, but you made the punishment on the coach so severe that he wasn't going to allow it. So what about this? If you said if anybody makes a hit to the head, the coach is suspended for 5 games and fined, you know, whatever, fined $25,000. You don't think that the coach is in this locker room preaching about not hitting to the head? You know that he is. So this could be stopped. The other thing, I don't like this silly argument about the size difference. Well, you know what? I'm 6'3". Yeah, he's 5'10". I went to hit. His head was there. You know what? You can avoid the head hit if you want to. You're smart enough. Now, I live in a world where I'm coaching. I've got a son who's playing at the high school level. And this year, USA Hockey really put some strict penalties and really put it to the officials of games to call anything that is close to hits like what we saw with Eller, to really make them punish you. You're gone. You're out of the game. And they want to take away the open ice hits when guys have their heads down. They want to take away the hits from behind. I mean, they've been trying to do it, but it was last summer, USA Hockey really change some things in terms of what the officials will call now. Now, I don't know enough about what's going on in youth hockey in Canada and whether that's not changing guys who are going through Canadian junior leagues, which and quite a bit of players in the National Hockey League go that route. But I will say that in the United States, youth hockey is changing, Tom. They are really, really pushing the officials to make this not a no-hit league, but to really crack down on guys taking advantage of players who are looking down at the ice, who maybe don't have the same skill level, and guys that are out there just to hurt other players. So kudos to the USA Hockey for changing things, and I hope that's happening in Canada as well. Because what happens if you learn this as a youth, then you don't play that way as you get older.
You know, Mike, I've been hesitant to jump on your bandwagon with the suspending the coach thing, but I'm starting to believe that it might be the only way. As far as, because you can't hit him in the wallet. And look, $5,000 is a lot of money to you and me. When NHL player, it is a drop in the bucket. A $5,000 fine, which is the max allowable under the current bargaining agreement, is nothing. It doesn't do anything. Nobody cares. Fine me, whatever. What am I going to do? Like, not, I'm going to have one less expensive steak dinner on my summer vacation. It does nothing. So that's not important. Missing games and missing money from those games, that makes a difference. That's when you're hitting the player in the wallet. And it actually hurts the guys who make less a lot more. If you're a if you're a $10 million player and you miss five games, yes, it's a bigger percentage of your money, but you still have far more to go around. If you take a guy making league minimum and he misses, you know, 10% of his games on a suspension, yikes, that's a big chunk of the paycheck there. That could be the difference between whether or not that guy's buying, you know, a house or whatever. And look, I'm not crying poor for these athletes. Don't get me wrong. But it is a more substantial difference. So I don't even know if that's necessarily equitable. But I do want to say this. When it comes to the role of where is the line today, and we could talk about pests here next, because I think it's a great tie-in with all of this. There are those guys out there who know it's their job to get under your skin, to make you try to hit them and take a penalty, to make you try to retaliate and take a penalty, right? They're trying the stuff that the ref doesn't see so that when you turn around and lose your mind, you know, and Marchand's brilliant at that, right? I mean, guys get so angry at him, they'll turn around and some guys lose it and they'll pop him. So I get it. You know, that's their role as an agitator, but there is that line. I don't want to see it devolve to a point where, as a pest, you feel like what you're doing, and look, some of the old-time guys would stoop to this level. They would spear guys in the groin, slash guys in the ankle, like deliberately try to injure these guys to get them to... It's like poking the bull, right? You know, you're trying to get the bull to become enraged and become angry. I don't condone that. And I think Eller by far crossed a bunch of lines, and I think we've seen other players across lines. Avery used to cross lines all the time, and there are guys who ride that questionable line. I brought up Asa Tikkanen in. You know, we had talked about current day Michael Bunting is another guy, and I know, like I said, Mike, I know him from here when I was in Tucson in the American League. He never, ever, ever stops talking. Even in the locker room, even on the bus, in the hotel, the guy's mouth is just always going. But that's what he does. That's how he's engaged. And so he's just chirping. And you know what? That is really annoying, but it doesn't hurt anyone. I don't see Bunting going out there headhunting with elbows to temples of guys. So you know what? You got to deal with the frustrations. I think that's what the work of a pest is these days. We're in a less physical game. Finishing checks used to be one of the ultimate things you could do. Forecheck, backcheck, paycheck, you know? And you go when you finish that. And there's value to that, especially in a playoffs, in a long playoff series. When the defensemen are looking over their shoulders and you know that hit's coming, you're going to try to hurry that puck, that outlet pass. You might make a mistake. It's hard to establish that when every time you throw a hit, now you got to look around and wonder if somebody's going to jump you.
Yeah, no, I know. I agreed.
Time for a quick break, then back with more of the Talking Puck Podcast in just a moment. You know, here at Talking Puck, we generate a lot of media on different platforms. Open Media's 4K download suite makes my life a lot easier, and it can help you too. Whether you need to download audio clips, convert streams to audio, which we do a lot of here, creating slideshows, or even need help with your social media accounts like Instagram and TikTok, there's something for everyone, from casual user to pro. Use our special link, bit.ly/4kpuck. That's bit.ly/4kpuck to receive a special discount of 25% off your purchase. That's bit.ly/4kpuck. Talking Puck is now on Signal to Noise Radio every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Signal to Noise is one of the fastest-growing internet radio stations, and now they have merch. Help spread the word about Signal to Noise Radio with t-shirts, stickers, keychains, and more. Shipping is direct and free. $25 gets you a t-shirt, while keychains and swag packs start at just $7. Order today at stnradio.com/merch. And thanks for your support. Now, back to the show.
I happened to be around, watched, talked to, interviewed, and see firsthand one of the all-time great super pests in Claude Lemieux. And anybody who is a hockey fan or has been long enough will remember that great rivalry started when in the 96 conference finals, late in the game, when he hit Chris Draper, from behind, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, now it's hard though, and I think you'd have to admit this too, right, Tom? When you are the broadcaster for the guy who did the wrong, you find yourself finding ways to say, you know, but right. It's easy to do. But I will say this. I'll tell you this real funny stuff that I used to do. So when that rivalry kept going and going and going, I would get the most vicious emails from Red Wing fans, right? Just saying horrible things to me personally. Because we were on an all sports day, and, you know, at that point you could send calls of the games everywhere, right? Other like there in Detroit, their sports station would play my calls, and then people get enraged and send me stuff.
Nice.
You know how I responded every single time? I would never say a word. I would just send a picture of the moment and of where Lemieux is hitting Draper from behind, and you see his face exploding on the glass. It's an iconic photo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I would just send that photo back to them without a word.
You're a pest yourself, Mike. You're a super pest.
Exactly.
Mike Haynes, super pest broadcaster. Who knew?
Stirring it up.
Yeah,
stirring the pot.
Anyway. I mean, from that standpoint, it's good for the rivalry. I will say this, though. I tend to be a little more honest about my own team, I think, than a lot of people are.
Are you?
Which
okay.
Some fans don't like, but I'm okay with that. I've said,
but we also had to get on that bus, though, Tom.
Oh, sure you did.
I mean,
sure you did.
You know, and I had to do some interviews. And you, let's be honest. You want to be liked. You know, if you want to get on that bus and get on that plane,
we're
going to the locker room. Because as you know, the wives hear everything.
Oh my goodness!
They tell the players everything.
Yes.
Even when it's not true. I don't know how many times I've had that conversation where I go, I never said that. I never said that.
Because it's like playing telephone, right? Whatever you actually said changes 100 times by the time it gets to somebody's ears.
And it's always skewed negatively towards the player by the wife if you don't kiss the feet, you know. Anyway, I don't know. Sorry, I didn't mean to go off on that topic.
No, that's
I just thought you'd get a kick out of the fact that I would send that picture to people.
Oh, I get to Mike Haynes, super pest broadcast. I love it, Mike. You've been elevated you are now like my third line. You can produce, but you can also go out there, and I'm like, all right, get after the other team's top player. You have a new role on the team. We'll have to send you after some other podcasters, maybe.
Do you think in that article about the super pests in the Toronto Star today, they talked about how that they are not able to do what the old super pests, the Lemieux, Kenny Linsman, Sean Avery, those guys, they said that the referees have them more on the radar this day and age. I don't know whether that comes down from the NHL, which I would think that it does, but there seems to be a real pushback against those super pests. I think there's less in the league. There's less of that in the league than there used to be. Would you agree with that or not?
I do, actually. Yeah. I think every team used to have one.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about individuals. I'll throw Tom Wilson in that category, who I think is a line crosser. But it used probably, so we're talking, let's talk about, you know, the 1980s and how the game has changed since then. You could name pests on almost every roster. You knew that guy was an agitator and he was going to go out there and that was his job. You know, and it's funny. I talked with Stu Grimson about this. Stu used to be my color partner, but he was also an NHL enforcer for, you know, the better part of what I think he played 15 years. And he used to talk about how his role changed even in his time in the NHL and how towards the end he could see, you know, not only is it being phased out, but it's going to be different. But you know what your role is, guys, and talking about roles and how they change on the team. It used to be that if this is the way you're going to make the league, you will do anything to stick. And in today's day and age of, as you talk about a lot of times, you have your superstars, and then you have nine forwards that do exactly the same thing, you know, and it's because that's the way they're being churned out now. It's almost like a factory. Everybody has this same kind of, you know, middle forward mentality where you play the same game and you're all taught the same thing. I think it's different now. And with guys who do want to stand out, like Bunting can score goals. Marchand can score goals. They can be effective hockey players. But maybe their personality tends towards that a little bit more. But I think a lot of guys have just kind of been pushed away from that into more of a grindy type of game as opposed to really, you know, being able to have that role anymore. I think that's yet another role that's going away along with fighting, which I'm okay with that. But I think that if you had a proper pest on your team, it certainly can give you an advantage, especially in the right moments when it's heated, when it's tense. If it's in a playoff game, it's game five in a 2-2 series. You want your pest in the middle of that pile trying to draw a penalty.
Right. No, absolutely. And it has been interesting watching that transition, hasn't it, in the NHL, where those I don't, you know, as I love Stu Grimson. You could sit and talk to him for hours. Obviously, he wouldn't be in the NHL now, would he? I don't think he'd be playing.
No, but having played hockey against him, and I'll say this, these quote-unquote tough guys, I don't think people appreciate that when you're in the NHL, there's still a skill set there. They can still shoot. They can still skate. They're not dummies.
It's unbelievable how good they are. If you take your typical beer league or anything, and you go, okay, he looks like it's all about comparison when you're watching. Again, love Stu Grimson, but you're watching him play against a Wayne Gretzky. There's such a wide disparity there. But then you take as Stu Grimson, you go, okay, let's go down the local beer league, and you go, oh, he's the Wayne Gretzky of the beer league.
Stu's going end to end. Yeah,
right. it's all perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's funny how these people are like, oh, you're not that good until they get out there against them. It's like, no, this guy's still a pretty skilled hockey player. But they forget that. So, Mike, I actually wanted to ask you this. You talked about having talked to Lemieux so many times and been around the guy, interviewed him. What was his thought process and approach to his role on the team?
You know what? And I know this sounds so cliche, Tom. He just couldn't be the stories. Couldn't be a nicer person off the ice. The stories
really
that are told about him. He had a brother who was physically, mentally disabled, and the love and the care that he had for his brother and for people who were unfortunate in that aspect, he really did a lot of good things. But he understood his role really well. And I just, maybe it's my own personality, I just would find it really hard to play a game in which 99% of the players, even those on your own team, hate you. That would just be a hard thing to deal with. He just had the right mentality for it, and he understood. And you know what? He really made his career, though. Everybody thinks about the being that pest, but if you remember back when he was with the Devils, he scored some, he was a playoff hero.
Yeah.
I mean, he scored big goals. So that's the thing that comes away from me. He was a tremendous hockey player. And to kind of piggyback on what you said earlier, you can't just be a pest and not be able to do anything else. And he was he knew he had to back up what he was doing as a pest by also producing as a hockey player. And he's a smart guy, and he really understood his role. But he has changed a lot, and he apparently now is just a really down to earth, really good person. But he understood his role and backed it up in terms of producing offensively.
Yeah, that's
if that makes any sense.
Well, that's the other thing too, is these guys who do produce, who are pests, but also put up some numbers, you're going to have a much longer career. So again, and Marchand's an easy guy to hang up there, as opposed to an Avery or a Barnaby, who, I mean, Avery was borderline circus by the time, you know, he was done. It's a shame that my enduring image of certain players, and Avery's an easy one. His example is always going to be when he was doing that weird wave in his arms in front of Marty Brodeur. That's what I'm going to remember about this guy. I'm not going to remember any goal he scored. I'm not going to remember much else. I'm going to remember that and the sloppy seconds comment. Those are the two things that I'm going to take with him. So, look, some guys are totally fine with that being their legacy, but to me, I mean, it's a shame.
I know.
There might have been more there.
Agreed.
Well, at the end of the day, though, so we have now, I don't know if we're going to have discipline coming for Lars Eller or not. Again, we're taping this on Tuesday. They haven't said anything yet, even if there's going to be, it was just a charging penalty assessed. But I would like to see, Mike, I think in conclusion to all of this, let pests be pests. But let's also continue to evolve the thought of player safety and trying to take care of these guys, because the skill players are the ones now, especially with the NHL's new focus, marketing the game, growing the game. It is on the skill players. The NHL has made it clear it is no longer about, you know, the bench clearing brawls. It is now about the sweet goals and the incredible saves. So that's what we need to protect. Those are your best business assets, if I may be black and white, cut and dry about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. As you mentioned earlier, why, if you're an owner, why would you have any sort of rules that don't protect your players? If you own the Carolina Hurricanes and you're going, look at my player, and look at Lars Eller is a dime a dozen player, right? My guy is very valuable. We're trying to get to the Stanley Cup this year. And wouldn't you just be furious if you had a player like that? By the way, I sent you something. Can you see it on the message right now?
That's the
picture I sent to everybody.
Oh my goodness. Look at,
is he his helmet coming off?
Oh, Chris Draper. I can't believe I shook that guy's friggin' hand.
No, that was Cicerelli who said that.
Draper couldn't say anything. His jaw was wired shut.
Right. My point is, this is, look at McCarty behind him. But anyway, that's the picture I would send to people when they would send mean emails to me.
Goodness.
From Detroit.
You are incorrigible.
I know. Sorry.
But you love it.
All right. I know.
I love that you still have the photo, by the way.
Oh, you never know when those mean emails are going to come.
Oh, my goodness. You know, folks, and this is funny. We're broadcasters, right? And you know, we're hired mercenaries, essentially. But when you're with a team for a certain period of time, you begin to grow and invest and root for the guys that are around you, because in a way they become your friends and your family. But here's the thing. In order for us to really understand what sports truly is, the fact that Mike still hates the Red Wings and carries this photo on his computer is just, just tells you what sports is in a nutshell and how deep those roots grow.
I know. But I, you know, just to, I know, but wrap up with what you were saying before. I think it's good. I started professionally broadcasting in the 80s in hockey, and I got to see, as the game evolved, and then just it was brutal in the late 90s. I mean, I was watching guys like, especially a Peter Forsberg, who had more talent than anybody I've ever seen, and just guys just riding him like it was a rodeo, you know, every night. And yeah. I think what we've gotten to the point, I enjoy watching skill, speed, imagination. I would rather watch that than watch guys who are fifth or sixth defensemen, just mauling a Peter Forsberg for 60 minutes. I just found it distasteful and unenjoyable to watch. I would rather watch the magic of hockey than watching guys who don't have the skill drag down the guys that do. So I think the game's in a better spot overall.
I do think that. I think that now the smaller water bug type players have a place again. The skilled players can make an impact. Mm-hmm. And really, at the end of the day, that's, again, what brings the people into the building, buys the tickets, sells the jerseys and the hot dogs and the popcorn, and makes mm-hmm. them pay, in some cases, outrageous prices, right. to keep this whole wheel turning. So that's what we have to do to keep it rolling.
In 1998, I don't know. I don't think Johnny Gaudreau is third in the league in scoring like he is now. Right.
Yeah.
And he's just fun to watch. I'd rather watch him play than watch, Darian Hatcher just beat up on people in the corners. I'd much rather watch Gaudreau do his magic.
Yeah.
And watch that other stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree. So hopefully that is where the game will continue to trend. Mm-hmm. This might be one of my favorite podcasts we've ever done.
It's just the picture of Lemieux on Draper, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's not just that. Honestly, this is a good one. Like, we had a lot to talk about today. And as the cake comes out of the oven, I like what I see. I like what I see. So, that maybe if anybody wants to let us know.
We need to take that cake out in your town in Tucson. Here the elevation's too much because most cakes here will just sink. They just don't rise. So this is more of a Tucson, Arizona cake today.
There you go. That's perfect. I'll apply some sort of frosting. Maybe we can figure that one out. That's a good place for us to wrap this one up. And I want to say thank you to everybody for listening. Please like, follow, and subscribe the podcast. And also don't forget, Mike and I are live every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Twitch, YouTube, we live stream on Twitter and Facebook as well now, and we welcome your comments. I'm at Callahan on Air. If you want to send Mike any pictures, at Buster the Dog 33 on
Twitter. You know what you're going to get back. If you say anything, if it's mean, you know what you're getting back.
So, I don't know how many Red Wings fans we have listening, Mike, but you might hear from one or two of them on Twitter. That's the new way to go these days.
I don't think they're smart enough to understand technology to be able to listen.
So. Look out. Look out, shots fired, still firing those shots. I love it. So, all right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We will talk to you next time. This has been the Talking Puck Podcast.